Today on our show, Ewan McGregor puts a wig on his wig, and Officer Winnie Lopez dots some T's and crosses some I's. It's ABTV Fargo, and we're talking Season 3, Episode 4, The Narrow Escape Problem. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
There we go! Time to just write.
Little whimsical, little magical.
Welcome to the story, people.
And welcome back to ABTV Fargo, your one-stop shop for these three specific people talking about this specific season of television. Yeah. I am, as I was last week, Lex Michael. I am all over social media at TheLexMichael, and I am here, as always, with...
I'm Dave Child. You can find me at MRDaveChild on all the internets. Also, DaveChild.com. My name is Dave Child. Who are you?
Wow. My name is Tara Erickson. You guys can find me on YouTube. Search me there. Also, you can find me on Twitter, at the Tara Erickson. And you can Google and stuff, too. Whatever you want to do.
Google us.
Stay true to your core.
Find us.
As always, hello to everybody in the live chat who is joining us live. You can follow along in the hashtag using hashtag ABTV Fargo. And, of course, go on to iTunes. You can like, subscribe, rate us 5 stars. That one's super important, not just because I literally need those 5-star reviews to continue to breathe, but because it lets our producers know how we're doing, how you like it, incentivizes them to not turn all the lights off in the middle of a show one day.
Yes. Yeah.
Don't fire us.
Yeah.
People are going to do 5 stars on iTunes today.
Yeah, and make sure, please, if you like the show, please review and star us, because the first season was not us.
Yeah, we weren't here for that.
About this. We weren't.
We weren't here.
And there's some people that didn't like those people so much. So if you like this current season
and
last
season... That's not our commentary, by the way.
That's not our commentary.
I don't even know who was here before I got here.
But if you can like us and talk about how great we are, it'll be great, and it would really help us out.
Yes, and if you leave us a 5-star review, we will read it on the show. And who doesn't like hearing their words on a podcast? I know I do. That's why I'm sitting here. So, all right. Episode 4, we're back now in Fargo. Gloria has returned from her little jaunt to Los Angeles. And we're starting to see... This felt to me like the end of Act 1 of this season. Right off the top, as always, just wanted to get general thoughts from both of you on this episode.
Right. I thought this episode was maybe the weakest we've seen this season. I still liked it, but I did feel like it had a sense of exposition. It was a needed exposition episode, especially since we had that kind of... we visited L.A. in the last episode, and I really liked that tangent that we went on. And I think that was important. But coming back, this felt like, okay, we're catching up. We're making sure we hit all the spots we kind of knew we were going to hit. And I enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed putting Peter and the Wolf on top of this. I think that smoothed the exposition out a bit. But besides that, it was a little bit of a... It was more of an exposition-heavy episode, less of a surprise and character-building one.
Okay.
I really enjoyed when Winnie came along, because Winnie is the loud against Miss... Like, it's a woman duo now, right? Where we've got Winnie and Gloria is invisible, and Winnie is definitely not, and super loud. So I feel
point.
Like they are going to be the best duo. Also, Winnie might mess up a few things. Like, it's like, relax, Winnie, because you're like a little nutty. Like, you're going to leave a note on her car. You met her 5 seconds ago. Like, I just thought that was... weird in the bathroom, like the note on her car about her license plate. But anyhow, I'm super excited about that woman duo relationship.
Right.
And that, yeah. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, I was not anticipating Gloria finding an ally
this
way. Especially because we've talked about on the entire series so far, it seems like the way we put it is you're either the very best cop that there is or you're the very worst cop that there is.
Yeah.
And I like that Winnie seems to exist in this gray area where maybe personally she's a little loud, she just throws a lot of personal information at you immediately. Mm-hmm. You can tell that makes Gloria a little uncomfortable. But when it comes to doing the actual police work, she's on it.
Yeah.
She's doing it efficiently, and she's actually looking at these bits of information and going, well, this seems odd.
Yeah, it was a great... I do have to go back a little bit on what I said before, because she was the best part of the episode, because we saw her really get into... We really did think that she was that clunky cop through most of it. And then when she does put the pieces together and shows up on Gloria's door, I think that was really a surprise. And yeah. that was a nice little like, oh, she's one of the good cops. I think in the Fargo-verse, I think the best cops are the women cops.
That does, that does. If
Except
you're not,
for last season.
Yeah, if you're not Patrick Wilson.
Yeah, Patrick Wilson and lady cops.
And lady cops. So I do want to talk about the top of this episode. We're going to save our discussion about the particulars of the Peter and the Wolf story for predictions. Mm-hmm. Because if, as we discussed before we went live, if the events of this series mirror the events of Peter and the Wolf much at all,
bit of a foreshadow.
What happens in that story may tip what's coming in certain episodes. So we'll save that particular discussion for a little bit later in the show.
Yeah.
But we have to at least address up top that we open with this narration from Billy Bob Thornton.
It is Billy Bob
yeah.
Thornton, right? It's interesting because they don't credit Billy Bob Thornton on the IMDb. He's uncredited for it. But everyone's recognizing him, and all of the reviews for the show are like, if I'm not mistaken, it is Billy Bob Thornton. But everyone's like, we're pretty positive
that's Billy Bob, who, yeah. of course, was Lauren Malvo in season one. And,
yeah.
of course, having the disembodied voice of your Lucifer-esque villain from season one telling this play over your current season characters, that already it puts the hairs on end a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree.
And then so we are telling the story of this episode through the prism of Peter and the Wolf. And what I thought was super interesting about this before we even get to the particulars of that story is it goes back to Noah Hawley talking about this season wanting to really blow up this idea of a story and different perspectives on stories. And I love that in a season where we're dealing with that idea very heavily, we now, four episodes in, are treating it even more like a play of sorts. We're treating this quote-unquote true story, but with heavier emphasis on story than true now,
mm-hmm.
as
mm-hmm.
a little bit of a whimsical play.
Yeah. Yeah, and I thought it was good. I think it's a good way of also separating each episode, because I think it's a good way of separating each episode since we're getting comments. I think that's the... I think that's the booth that we hear in the headphones.
Oh, are we getting a little
I think
we're
hitting a bit of interference in the headphones, and I think it might be the booth. So, anyways, what were we talking about? We were talking about, yes, it's a good way of separating each episode because when we have a story that is, like, arcing in each episode, building and building and building, it's good to get a feeling of just the TV episode that stands on its own. And I think that's what the Peter and the Wolf really does in this one. It just makes it. It introduces a new thing, much like in the last one, the going to LA, but also the whole book and going into the book was great.
Yeah, I just liked how it gave everyone a pretty clear label. Just like right to the bat, you're like, oh yeah, that all of that makes sense.
Well, and even without knowing the Peter and the Wolf story,
right?
Just the labels that everybody got, the fact that okay, so Emmett is the bird, will be depicted by the flute.
Mm-hmm.
Ray is the duck, will be depicted by the oboe. And of course, if Emmett is the bird, that, of course that makes Ray the duck.
The duck.
Just
right.
pure surface level.
Yeah.
The clarinet is the cat, and that's Nikki. The grandfather is Cy, and that's the bassoon.
Mm-hmm.
The blast of the shotguns, which is the kettle drum. Is Yuri, the French horns is the wolf, and that's Varga, and of course Peter, depicted by the strings, is Gloria.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into the specifics of that once again in predictions.
Because again, when you know how all of these characters in the Peter and the Wolf story interrelate with each other, you start to go,
I feel like they're telling us what's going to happen in this season. And we could be wrong, but it's something that we want to say for predictions in case you don't want to know that. You can turn off us at that point.
Also, in that really quick with VM Varga when he's like barfing, when he's like chowing down his breakfast meal and then he goes to barf it up and he lays the piece of paper on the ground, that's like a little callback to Bart and Fink. Because there's the same character. And I never seen that. Well, I'm sure it's happened before in other movies, but I hadn't seen it before where someone actually lies. Like, they go to barf up meals and they bring, like, something with them to lay on the
right.
ground. Where I'm like, you're barfing up a meal three times a day. Like, why do you care about... Anyhow, I thought it was a nice, like, little wing to it.
Right. And becomes, like, a ritual. Where
yeah.
they're, like,
it's
setting
like
it
a
down.
Thing where, like, he's not going to be able to barf unless he sets that down.
Yeah.
It's funny. I had forgotten about the connection to Bart and Fink there. That what that reminded me of immediately was, again, like a couple of things this season have was Breaking Bad.
Right.
Because you see both Gus and then later Walt do that exact same thing. And that's the first time I remember, because I guess it slipped out of my brain as part of Barton Fink,
yeah,
really seeing that laying, very delicate laying out of the towel, the preparing to purge, as it were.
Yeah.
I do have to give a shout out to Lindy May in our chat, who said Gus puked the same way from Breaking Bad before you mentioned that.
Oh, hey. Okay, yeah.
So we're not stealing from you. He's not even seeing the chat.
We
so
are,
good job.
We are simpatico, you and I. So, okay, so as always, Ray and Nikki are in the middle of a scheme.
Right.
And this,
it's a new scheme.
This scheme involves a little bit of parent trap action, as it were, and Ray shaves off his mustache and puts on a wig to impersonate his brother.
Yeah. I like this because one of the things that I find funny about this show is how unconvincing Emmett's hair is. I feel like it's not the best wig that they have.
You mean on the meta level, right? The wig that the actor Ewan McGregor is wearing.
Yeah, the wig the actor uses. And I think that's maybe them leaning towards maybe they're like hair plugs. Maybe it's meant to be like too perfect or something. It's just not a very convincing wig to me. So when Ray puts on a wig that looks very fake, to me, it does kind of look the same. It kind of has the same feeling to it. So I thought maybe that was kind of a nod. They know how bad that wig looks, and they kind of are playing with it.
Right, and I love that even when he's in disguise, it's actually not, if you're not looking too closely, it's not the worst disguise.
Yeah, because it looks like he's just gained some weight.
Right, he does look definitely a little blow. If you saw Emmett yesterday, you might be concerned for his health at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I did. There's a really good on FX.com. You can watch a featurette about them getting into the costumes for both Emmett and Ray. And Ray has a broader nose and kind of a more of a chin. Yeah, has a double chin kind of going on that they put on Ewan McGregor. So he is like a little fatter and has a different type of nose. So there is a difference between them. And it was also fun to just see Ewan McGregor play Ewan McGregor in another role.
Right. You've got the actor playing a character who is acting the role of another character that same actor also plays.
Right.
Exactly. And there's still some differences. I also thought it during his conversation with that bank manager that Emmett's character would not have been as nice to the woman who was entering the bank, who's being yelled at a lot. And he's like, no. Where it's like, Emmett would not have said no. He would have just been like, yeah, go away from me. Let me have my space. Like, he would have, but he still let a little bit of Reyism sneak in there, which I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I just like the bank manager being like, oh, she's more of a looker than a thinker.
Right.
Which is just, one, that's such a shitty thing to say, just in general. But also, her? Like, she's good looking, but like in that Midwestern way.
Yeah, not the typical of what we would be used to seeing with that being said.
And I'm glad they didn't cast like a bimbo to be said such a sexist thing to.
Right.
It's just a normal looking woman.
Because he's like that with everybody.
Yeah,
I'm
he's
sure.
just completely sexist with everyone.
there were a couple of exchanges that left a similar taste in my mouth tonight. Yeah. Like Ray talking to his boss as well. There were a couple of lines where I was like, yeesh.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because Ray's boss, and we'll get to that a little bit in greater depth in a few minutes, but like the fact that Ray's boss was ostensibly trying to hold the moral high ground and was still, like, the term, I don't know about you guys, the term poontang always makes me cringe, like, involuntarily every single time that I hear it.
Yeah. It doesn't bother me so much because I like the movie Pootie Tang. So it just reminds me of Pootie Tang, and then I'm okay.
It's that extra syllable that really, like, lightens that load for me.
Yeah.
It's a little
Y in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yikes. So this scheme of
beautiful snort.
I was just gonna whistle past it. It's gonna be an Easter egg for people.
Keep happening.
So Ray and Nikki's scheme involves using the safety deposit box information that she got from Emmett's house and getting what they believe to be the stamp out of that safety deposit box.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like that. You know, Nikki puts this idea in his head that the most powerful man in the room is the richest man in the room.
Yes.
That's what I had written down. Yeah.
And you see this moment where it's like, well, I'm not going to get what I want. He's saying the key's like trying to follow protocol. We got to make a new key because we don't want to drill into the box. And then watching Rey in character basically double down on this bluff by saying, no, okay, well, then we'll just close out all my accounts and I'm going to take it over to Chase. And I like when he says Chase.
Chase was such a shot to the heart for him.
The bank manager's face.
Laughs. Oh,
like,
my
he said
God.
Something really unkind about his mother almost, but like was wounded by it.
Yeah.
Did we see if that was like a local Fargo bank or a local bank to that city? I'm pretty sure it was.
I believe it would have been. Yeah. I don't remember specifically the name of the bank.
Talking about Chase feels like it is like, I'm going to take it to the corporate.
One of the big chain banks.
I'm going to take it to the Walmart of banks rather than this mom and pop bank that you got going on.
At that moment, I was real glad that I didn't bank with Chase because I was like, well, yeah. I don't want to be the, you know. Right. With that crowd.
Yeah, like, don't if you be. Bank with Chase, did last night's Fargo make
right?
you insecure?
Really hurt
like,
you? Yeah, that's what I would have felt.
Although, that whatever bank that was, we probably don't know what bank that is because they come off very insecure. I mean, I have a very similar-looking brother myself who's just 3 years older than me. So now I know if he shaves off his beard, he could just go in.
and puts his Dave hair on?
Yeah, well, we have very similar hair, too. He doesn't have to do much. He really just has to shave the beard. And then we're pretty much the same person.
Hey, hey.
And that's the thing. It really, the gambit here really does depend on this very Minnesota nice concept of, oh, well, I recognize you, and it's okay. I trust you. And, like, I don't want there to be any hard feelings. And, like, no, you don't have to do that. Let's just get it all worked out. All he had to do at any point, I'm sure it's protocol, even if you recognize the person, to get an ID or a card of some kind, and they're just that trusting.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the second he hands over an ID, I mean, he would have had to try and bluff his way out of that situation like he eventually did.
Right. Yeah. But also, he's like, he's so rich and he's probably one of the biggest clients that they have, is they want to be like, we know this person. This
right.
is, we're set. And that kind of hubris is kind of their takedown.
And ultimately, as we see, that bluff pays off. They drill through the lock, and Rey gets access to this deposit box.
Yeah.
Which does not have a stamp in it.
Does not. It
no
has
stamp.
A big bag of dog ashes.
Cremains.
Cremains, I believe, is the appropriate nomenclature. Which is a reference to Big Lebowski.
Yes.
Oh,
I believe they say that almost exact line.
I forgot.
In Big Lebowski.
The line, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Walter says to the dude. I think the dude refers to somebody as a Chinaman. And Walter says, digresses, hard digression in the middle of one of his rants. And he says, and by the way, dude, Chinaman is not the preferred nomenclature. Asian American, please.
Yeah.
And I think maybe, I couldn't remember if cremains was actually said in that too, because they are dealing with cremains.
Of course, and ashes do play a fairly prominent role in one of the later scenes in that movie.
Right.
Yeah.
And I like that the bag, it's a very nice...
green velvet, looks
green
like.
Green velvet bag, says Laverne on it.
Laverne.
Oh.
Laverne.
And such a lovely name for anyone.
And how did he not know what that was? As soon as you open it and it's a big bag of dust, he's just
I kind of thought maybe he hit it. I know, right? Like, you're like, that looks like ashes right off the bat. Like, it's definitely not cocaine, right?
No,
and
I guess,
you're a parole officer. Come on now.
Maybe it's heroin, because that's a little brown.
God, I mean, come on.
But that seems like a stretch.
Yeah, I agree. Just smell it. I mean,
it doesn't smell good.
He tasted it.
And then he just dumped
Looked
it out in
it,
the
yeah.
trash.
And he's rifling through it. And then I'm like, hey, maybe he did hide a stamp in the ashes.
There was something so sad about this.
It
because
was.
It's because
poor guy.
A, Rey is that dumb. And and B, Rey is also that desperate to get one over on his brother that he will actually dig through this bag. Even if you don't recognize that you're digging through cremains, but after the third or fourth second of your hand being at the bottom of the bag sifting through it,
right.
you've got to assume there's nothing else in there, right?
Right.
I would think.
Oh, he's desperate.
But he also decided, I'm still going to take this bag.
He took the bag.
The bag so he could put the money into
took
it.
Took the bag, and then yes, $10,000, which he's slightly chastised by Nikki for not taking more.
And he says it's fair market price for the stamp.
Yeah.
Which, in his brain, I could see how that's an argument, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
Question mark?
Right. So it was enough. It's funny how Rey keeps hitting these moments where he's like, this is enough. I think we've gone enough.
Right.
And then something happens by either Nikki or, I think in this case, from Sai and Emmett that kind of keeps them kind of going back and forth, keep that war kind of happening.
Right.
So.
And of course, I like when Emmett finds out about this. His reaction, I love Emmett's reactions because he seems more than angry, more even than hurt. He just seems so flummoxed by everything his brother does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, his reaction to this doesn't seem like it necessarily escalated too far beyond what it was the week before last, when he found the tampon in his drawer.
Right.
Yeah.
But this even seems like even more of a bridge too far for him. He literally says, what is it, like, the used feminine products in a man's desk drawer, that's one thing, but, like, you know, this, like, you think you know a guy. Mm-hmm. I think it's funny that that's where the line is for Emmett.
Right.
Yeah.
I also, since you brought it up, I am curious to see, and we've talked a little bit about, what was her name, the new cop?
Winnie.
Is menstruation a new theme of this show?
I know.
This
you just put her in there.
Our second in three episodes, yep, where there was a heavy focus on menstruation in at least one scene.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm curious about why that is. If that's going to be kind of a nod towards, I don't know, just being a woman in general is what's being talked about? Or
strong
if,
women get their periods, Mr. Dave Child.
That's what I know this. This is something I know and support. And I think everyone should get period. I would get it if I could.
If this you were strong enough.
Thank you. Thank you. All right.
It's a big day.
We have a big day
for equality.
Big wins.
Women audience in this. I'm just curious to see where they're going with this and if it's going to keep coming back.
Or if we're just going to get every couple of episodes a real big nod to menstruation.
Right.
True. It could be not. Did you also have a moment when Winnie appeared, did you think for maybe a second it could be Molly?
I thought for a second we might get a cameo from either Molly or in a world where they're throwing in, like, Billy Bob Thornton's voice. And
I know,
like,
you're right.
There was a part of me that's like, is Marge Gunderson still out there?
Well, I think that would be, like, that would be a deep cut. And I guess it would work because it's the 90s, right, that it happened, so the age would still be fine.
And she could still, in theory, Marge Gunderson could still be a police officer.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But she's probably not getting her menstruation anymore.
Probably not.
So
no.
I kind of didn't think it was going to be her.
Right.
But I thought maybe it could be Molly.
Could be Molly.
Yeah.
And that we were going to maybe see Molly and have a brief discussion with Molly. But when it was this new character, I thought, this is great. And also, I'm also glad that something big that happened in a previous episode, the car hitting several other cars, wasn't just passed over, and it wasn't just something that was like, that was a crazy thing that happened in a parking lot. It becomes a police matter that comes back and bites him in the butt.
And he's a grandfather. He's supposed to be good.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? He's supposed to know, and it's going to come back to bite him in the butt.
Yeah, I think it's really that scene where, especially to jump ahead a little bit.
Sure.
I know we're kind of skipping around a little in this episode, but when the scene where the cop is waiting in the waiting area in the office, and just knowing and having those two guys, Yuri and what's his name?
Nemo.
He's both of them just like sitting and staring at them and just knowing that the presence of a cop itself is not what they want at all.
Yeah.
And that felt like that felt so tense. And also had this wonderful, it felt like that scene reminded me of William H. Macy in the movie.
Yes.
And there's all these like, there's a lot of William H. Macy's in this episode, I realized, because there was that scene and also earlier when Gloria is talking to Ray for the first time, that also felt like the same sort of am I talking to myself sort of stuff, which
absolutely
Sai says, so
to go back a little bit, because we were talking about Gloria and Winnie meeting in this bathroom, they're both there at the parole office and they were both there to talk to Ray. But before we even get there, we have another scene with Shea Whigham, which was another, like, real uncomfortable, like, why does this guy in a position of authority have to be such a misogynist jerk?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, jeez.
Like, talking to her about his men in Iraq being killed and coming home, and basically saying the explicit meaning to what he's saying, as I read it, was, do what I say or you're gonna meet a very sticky end.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that her reaction was she can't say, dude, what the shit are you talking about? But her reaction was, what does that have to do?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's just trying to be like, you're just trying to stir stuff up. isn't that the job of a cop?
Right.
Is to keep working on something until it's actually done? And if you have some leads, and it just, yeah, it felt very misogynistic.
Well, he also threatened her. He said, well, they went home in a bag. The guy, he's yeah. like, the guys I've seen die, the ones who tried to shake him up. And his last line before she's like, well, I'm going to spend a few days, he's like, they went home in a bag. And I'm like, dude, really?
Dude, yeah.
And I was still so proud of Gloria. Well, she's like, well, I'm going to spend a few more days on it. And she just got the F out of there. And right. I was like, yeah, girl.
Yeah. Sheriff Mo.
And I found myself thinking, I wonder if this streak of defiance is something that's new for her.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Maybe in becoming like ex-chief and being frustrated with always being invisible, that she's yeah. fed up.
And finally, and not maybe thinking about it consciously, right?
But no, just, yeah.
Especially under the circumstances, right? Everything that's now happening around her, in addition to all of these contradictions that we were talking about last week,
mm-hmm.
I feel like that's got to drive somebody, even if you're not actively aware of it, towards decisive action, if not outright defiance in certain cases.
Yeah.
Right.
So to see her just go, all right, dude, now I'm just going to, yeah, I'm going to go. I'm going to do this for a couple more days. It's going to be fine. And continue to follow it. I like it. And I'm wondering, is how new for her as a person is this? But when she gets to the parole office, too, we get this moment where she passes Nikki coming out.
Yeah.
And they don't know each other Mm-mm. at this point. Nikki just sees a police officer and they pass. We get that slow motion. They look at each other like...
Right. And you hear the music of the cat as the cat is passing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was a great moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Gloria talks to Ray and is really struck when she sees his nameplate. Because it's... By the end of this episode, it's several coincidences too
right.
many. And mm-hmm. I think this is the first straw that starts to break the camel's back, because it's the moment where she goes, I don't know what's happening here.
Yeah.
But I know something's happening here.
Right.
Right.
Especially since there's too many Stussies.
Way too many Stussies.
Too many Stussies.
Way too many. And she also says just because the perp's dead doesn't mean the investigation stops, which for everybody else it does mean that.
Yeah.
There. But her and Winnie are going to be the only ones, right? Just
yeah.
because this one thing stopped, it's not a big deal, doesn't mean that the investigation should stop.
Right. And Sheriff Mo just wants to kind of get it just wrapped up.
Yes.
He just wants it done.
And in that scene, too, with Gloria, I actually thought for the first half of the scene or so, Ray was actually doing a pretty decent job at not seeming incredibly guilty.
I agree.
Yeah.
But then it seems like he got a little too wigged out. That moment where he stood up and basically tried to shoo her out of his office.
Yeah.
I was like, no, you were doing so well, dude. Now you're like starting to tip your hand a little too hard. Stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, never shoehorn people out of the office.
I feel like that's something
Ray and Cy both do. That they're just like, well, okay, I'm going to tell you one thing, but now I want you to go. Just leave my office as soon as possible.
I don't know what else to tell
you. If you ever do anything wrong, listeners, just talk to the cops for as long
never
as possible.
Never get up.
Just
no. don't
never
leave.
Look them straight in the eye. And just, we're right at the end,
then
just going for a little kiss. Just let them.
A little kiss and a hug.
You're welcome. You're welcome, audience.
And then now Ray is getting ready to leave the parole office, presumably to go see Nikki and be like, a police officer just came, was asking questions about Maurice. Maybe we should, like, I don't know, do something about that. That's probably not good for us. Hey.
Yeah.
And his boss calls him into the office. And, of course, as we have discussed all season long thus far, Ray does not cover his tracks particularly well.
Yeah.
And if dating a parolee is a clear violation of your contract, written or otherwise, maybe not the best to be flaunting it in public settings where photos can be taken
right.
and then mm-hmm. sent to your employers.
Yeah, right. And this was something that Cy, I think, specifically threatened when they were in the diner. So he's just making good on his threat. He kind of knew this was kind of coming. Or Ray was just not going to do anything at all. So it was nice to see that come to fruition. I also love Cy's kind of trying to be a badass.
It was the point.
Yeah.
The point, and then getting into his car. And
he
then
did it like twice, like three times, yeah.
And then driving. All he needed to do was stay in his car.
Yep.
The problem was getting out of his car.
I feel like he wanted to be out there to gloat.
Yeah, because he wanted to have both this, where he's just standing and looking badass, but he also wanted to drive away pointing, and he should have just stayed in his car and just like pointed until he
pointed and peeled off.
Yeah, and then reveal of him putting the
and I, like he wanted to gloat, And then he wanted it all to be incredible leading up to this reveal of the car with all of the wheel locks
with the
on
boots.
It's like a grandpa. A grandpa would be like, I should get out first, right? So that I can, like, look cool.
Yeah,
they don't know.
He's very grandpappy. And just how, especially how he takes care of Emmett. It is, well, we'll talk about that in a bit, but it was strange to see, consider him in the Peter and the Wolf scenario, because the grandpa is usually trying to watch out for Peter,
mm-hmm.
who is Gloria in this sense. So that's the one of the few ways where it's the match doesn't quite match up.
Yeah.
Then, in the scene where Ray is talking to his bosses, another moment that made me feel like, I guess we're not supposed to like Ray all that much, but made me feel so truly bad for him when he realizes he could walk away with a slap on the wrist,
mm-hmm.
but he truly is in love with Nikki.
Yeah.
And it just never occurs to him for a second that it may not be quite as mutual as he thinks it is.
Yeah. Right.
And he gives up everything so that she can walk away scot-free out of this particular situation, and you know, you won't go back to jail, and he won't, you know, he can go and they can get married and they can live their life together.
We should also talk about how the sexism and the misogyny that's in that scene too.
Yes, well, that's where we get that poontang line.
Fry some bacon on that.
Yeah, thing. So it's just like it. Yeah, it feels like there is a point to this. There is a point to like all of the misogyny and the way that the female police officers are able to be invisible and thus more powerful.
Yeah, but it also, like, she's definitely hoodwinking and bamboozling. Now, at this point, I'm like, oh, Nikki is definitely doing both those things. They warned him and said it out loud, and I'm like, yeah, she's definitely.
Yeah, Drew Novak in the chat asked, is Nikki in love with him, though? And that's the big question that we're
I changed my
sure.
mind.
Well, where
remember, because
right
in the first couple episodes, I was like, yeah, I think she does truly love him. And now, I'm like, she cares, but I agree. She's doing the hoodwinking and bamboozling.
Right.
And once somebody better comes along, she's going to be like, peace. She just needs to get what she needs to, like, live her life comfortably so mm-hmm. she doesn't have to, like, con her whole entire life, even though I think she finds it enjoyable.
And I feel like if that can include Ray,
she'll take it.
And if it doesn't
see you later.
Exactly. And I'm the same way. I keep going back and forth. Not even every episode, every scene that she's in. I'm just like, what is your game
what's
here,
the
girl?
Deal?
I don't know. But then I'm very curious as to Ray's headspace at the end of this episode, because they were planning on meeting with, I guess it's going to be their competitive bridge sponsor.
Yes.
They're sponsors in the competitive bridge
circuit? I knew nothing about the world of competitive bridge, and I feel like now that I know a little bit, I know even less than I did.
Right. I was surprised. I wanted that to be Brian Michael Murray. Or is that his name? Brian Doyle Murray?
Doyle Murray?
Yeah. The Murray brother who plays the mayor of Punxsutawney in Groundhog Day. And also in Scrooged plays Bill Murray's dad in the flashbacks. I almost thought that was going to be him. And then from the back it looked like him. But then it turned to the front. And I was like, no, not a Murray brother.
Nah.
But this is this thing that they were talking about being their dream. However new a dream it was, this was
What a dream.
You gotta shoot for something, right?
Yeah.
But he chooses not to be at that meeting. He chooses to go and sit with the box from his desk that he cleared out and mm-hmm. drink by himself.
Right, and Joe Johnson in the chat reminded us that he's a plumber guy. He's like, I think he just owns a bunch of plumbing stuff.
Right, yes.
I think they set that up. But yeah, and this was the moment where I was like, oh, Ray keeps saying all we need is the 10,000. All we need is like a little bit of money to kind of help us. Now we have money to kind of get us into the competition anyways. But because of what's happening with Sai, that's going to make it so it's not good enough. The fight's going to still be going on.
Right.
Which probably brings us to Varga.
Brings us to Varga.
Yeah. He's Vargas? Is that say Varga?
VM Varga.
Varga. Okay. The way Varga is interesting, because one of the things that someone in Reddit pointed out, Varg in Sweden means wolf. So Varga is actually kind of in Swedish, means wolf. So it is kind of that, which is funny considering what we also know this actor from in depth is Harry Potter,
where he plays
Lupin, who's a werewolf.
Spoilers for Harry Potter 3 through the rest of them.
Yeah, you should have watched those by now. But who's a werewolf, and also Lupin come from Lupus, which also means wolf. So he's constantly playing a wolf in these shows. We find out a few things about him in this episode. You know, I'm going to take my back. I really like this episode. There is a lot of character building. I think I read an AV review that kind of spoiled it for me.
I see.
I think that kind of tends to happen with bad reviews. But this was great. How he was bulimic. I think we found out why he has such bad teeth.
Yes.
And we also find out what's in the truck that's being stored. Mm-hmm. In that one parking lot is Varga himself.
It's basically not any sex slaves. There are no slaves.
His little home / office / scary den place.
Where he does all the internet stuff, has a nice picture of Stalin hanging up.
Yeah. If his FSB is what Yuri called it, FSB, which is like a computer interface that carries data back and forth. And like, so when they cut into that trailer, it was like all of those computers in the back.
And we also, that same scene, we got some discussion of young Vladimir Putin.
Putin, yeah.
Which is timely, yikes.
Yeah, jeez.
That too, combined with when Varga shows up at Emmett's, and they talk about how Varga is going to essentially insert himself as a full partner in this business. Mm-hmm. I got your $25 million line of credit as an extension. Right. Goes on this long diatribe about essentially class struggles. Mm-hmm. And that coming in the same episode, that we're living in an age of refugees and all of the same episode as we get this little Putin conversation. It's like,
yeah, and what's
it's like being on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's also important about that Putin conversation with Yuri was Yuri was talking about how there is untruth. The truth is what he says it is. And that plays into the very first episode and what keeps reoccurring of people being mistaken for other people, saying what the truth is, what being controlling the narrative.
Yes.
Seems to play into the same theme.
Goes back to also this inescapable reality that Varga was talking about, right? And we were talking about that in terms of all of the contradictions that exist in so many of these characters' lives. And then Yuri was talking about, there's God's truth.
And
there's
man's
truth.
Yeah. And then there's untruth.
Right.
Which he said is the weapon the leader uses. Yeah. Which I'm like, oh yeah.
And feel like you can draw a pretty clear line from the concept of that untruth that he's referring to Varga's inescapable reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, all right, I don't know if you guys had this moment watching the episode, but I had a moment where I wanted to give me and the rest of us a little pat on the back for calling this. Varga's got such a strong grip on Emmett because of technology. And it became not implicit, but explicit in this episode. Varga was literally tapping his phones and hacking into his emails.
Very mm-hmm. true.
And we talked about last episode. We've been talking about it, I think, for a couple of weeks now. Gloria's lack of a relationship with technology, I think, is going to become quite useful to her in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he also talked about in Varga's discussion with Emmett about how the point, what he's trying to get is to become so rich he's invisible, mm-hmm. which is interesting to bring up that's also Varga's superpower, is that he is invisible and is not seen. And he's all about control, which is, I think, where the bulimia comes in, too, because he wants to be able to control himself and what he takes in and what he purges. Is that's kind of wanting to feel that sense of control. And he also lives in a truck. He's not buying himself nice things. He talks about his $200 suit and his handed down tie.
Right, and he flies coach, not because he can't afford first class, but because he's not dumb, as he puts it, essentially.
Right, but what type of life does he have? That seems like the saddest life. And it just means, what does he feed off of? What is his bliss in life? And it's just to control people.
Right. And I had this moment too. I had this same thought process of what is Varga's end game here? Is he working for himself? Is he working for a bigger shadowy conglomerate that we've seen hinted at in a couple seasons of Varga past?
Yeah.
What is he doing this for? And then I remember, well, this is a show where every year we get a character with wildly nebulous motivations who seems to be doing bad things for the sake of doing them and seeing how people react.
Yeah.
Right. And also a sense of superiority and machismo.
Absolutely.
This also plays a big part in it, too. I think actually a reoccurring villain in the Fargo universe is actually toxic masculinity.
Yes,
I think it keeps. I think it keeps coming back.
And the male ego, absolutely.
Yes, yeah. Totally.
Because it makes these men who are. Some of them are successful, some of them are less so. It makes their own ego, their own sense of bravado, of invulnerability, is what ultimately leads to their downfall every single time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I have to assume it's going to play out similarly for at least a few of these characters.
Yeah. Should we... Any other comments we want to make before we get into predictions?
No, I was just going to say that he said, like, number one is the building of wealth, and number two is to use the wealth to become invisible.
Right.
And I'm like, we already know Gloria is invisible. So there's the combo of that, of him being on the same level as Gloria.
They're perfect foils for each other.
And we're talking about Wolf and Peter, that it's like, okay, cool. So that's, yeah.
And also in the way that Varga is doing everything, we think, for himself, and has absolutely no family, while Gloria is doing everything for mm-hmm. her son.
Yes.
You get a sense of that.
So a couple last points I do want to hit from the episode before we move into prediction territory. That the scene between Varga and Emmett ends on a note that if you do like Ray a whole bunch, I think would be a little concerning.
Yeah.
Asks point blank if Ray is going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Emmett says no, calls him a loser, but basically... I feel like he's hedging a little bit. He's like, no, but he'll probably try to be a problem, but he's not. He's my brother, and he's not gonna be an issue. We've seen how Varga deals with problems.
Right.
That probably isn't great news for Ray if Ray and Nikki keep getting involved in Emmett's business, and then the focus turns to Nikki. And if Ray is a loser, what does that make her? And Emmett assumes she must also be a loser, or she couldn't possibly see anything in my brother.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
I think Varga's a little smarter than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, she's a swango. She swangles.
Swangles. I like it.
She swings back and forth.
Swango's going to swang.
She swangs the right way. When it comes around, she knows.
And then the very last scene of this episode is Winnie Lopez coming to Gloria's house as she's getting ready to go to bed. And the two of them talk. And Winnie tells Gloria about the very strange day that she's had. And the very strange, which should have been a very simple, open and shut vehicular issue, seems to be a little more than that. And they start putting these dots in front of Gloria. And Gloria still doesn't know how all of the dots connect. But now it's like the powder keg is lit.
Right.
She knows. She knows. She doesn't know how, but she knows the Stussies are connected to the murder of her stepfather.
Yeah.
And it seems like now she's got direction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also she's got a partner in this now, which I think in the Fargo universe especially... always helps propel the actual solving of the crime once people start to team up together.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
And the very last thing I want to talk about before we move into predictions is the title of this episode, which we didn't talk about yet.
Right, we almost forgot.
So this episode is called The Narrow Escape Problem. And
is there a bridge term for this?
There might be.
Okay.
I am not, as we've discussed, I am not well-traveled in the world of bridge.
Because the only thing I could find on Wikipedia...
Same thing. I went to Wikipedia as well. The first and last place you need to go for all the facts
you will ever need
in life.
This is how much of an experts we are on this panel is. We go to Wikipedia. And I gotta say, this is the most confusing Wikipedia article I think I've seen on it. It's because it's a lot of science talk. It's this was a Wikipedia article written by scientists, not for non-scientists. The narrow escape problem is a ubiquitous problem in biology, biophysics, and cellular biology. The formulation is the following: a Brownian particle, ion, molecule, or protein is confined to a bounded domain compartment of cell by a reflectory blah 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 blah, and it has a very small window through which it can escape. That's the only thing I read that I was like,
which
I know what that means,
right? Which I can see the simple, really simple layman version as I understand it.
Okay,
not being a biophysicist, it's essentially referring to this particle is boxed in. This particle is completely boxed in, completely trapped, except for a very small window through which it can escape. And the narrow escape problem refers to calculating the mean escape time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to find, like, the perfect time to get out of a problem.
Exactly. Might be a problem where you're completely,
like,
it seems,
boxed in. Like a traditional one. Yeah.
Right. So how does this pertain to this specific episode?
Well, I feel like... half the characters on this show
are trying to get out of that problem.
If not increasingly becoming that particle that's boxed in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, both of the Stussy brothers alone, the walls, whether they're aware of it moment to moment, on both Ray and Emmett seem to be closing in little by little.
And I think you can maybe make an argument that Gloria finds her escape because she is able to kind of finally put the pieces together. And now she kind of knows what's happening, and she sees
where the window is.
Very small window and leave.
I mean, for us viewing it, we can see the picture of everyone versus, like, everyone in the story has literally a narrow escape problem that they have one traditional problem that they're trying to either run away from or, you know, fix or whatever. But we see all sides of the story. But if you just look from each character's perspective, it's like, I think each one has...
Right.
A problem that we are already seeing it, but for them, it hasn't come to fruition yet.
But it seems like it's about to.
It's about to. It's going to blow up.
Right? That powder keg is going to go kaboom. Yeah. How's that going to happen? I have some thoughts. I bet you guys do, too. Let's move into predictions.
Predictions. So...
I guess we really right off the top in this section should discuss the plot in brief of Peter and the Wolf.
Peter and Wolf, yeah. Mm-hmm. So in Peter and the Wolf, one of the things that happens is there's Peter leaving the house. The grandfather's like, hey, be careful. There could be a wolf that comes out. Peter lets out a duck, and there's also a bird that flies around. The duck is in the pond. The bird's flying around. What ends up happening?
There's also a cat.
What ends up, to skip ahead, because the cat is trying to get... Anyways, I'll skip the cat. What ends up happening is the wolf comes out and ends up eating the duck.
Yes.
The wolf eats the duck.
Now, remember, and this is why we held this discussion till predictions in our story.
Right.
The wolf is Varga and the duck is Ray.
The duck is Ray. And in order to get the wolf, Peter uses the bird, which is Emmett, in this conversation... to drag out, to lure the wolf out in order to choke it and tie it up and then take it to the zoo. But right before it goes to the zoo, the hunters show up and we're like, hey, we'll shoot him. And Peter says, nah, we're going to take him to the zoo.
And the hunters, by the way, in our story, Yuri and
Mina. Yuri, which is an interesting choice because... they feel like they might be nefarious when you bring up the hunters' guns, but they're against the wolf as much as everyone else is, if not more. They really want to kill the wolf, but in the end, Peter saves the wolf from being killed by the hunters. So, is this predicting that one, Ray is going to be killed by Varga, mm-hmm. or and somehow Varga is going to kill Ray, which he's already threatening to do? So it feels like it's on the horizon. Two, is will that turn Emmett to try and finally go against Varga and team up with Gloria in order to drag Varga out?
Let me double down on that. Here's what I was thinking. If we're going to follow the Peter and the Wolf pattern.
Right.
In a season where so far, all season long, we've been dealing with mistaken identity.
Right.
We use... okay, somehow, quote-unquote, use Ray as a distraction. If Varga intends to kill Emmett and ends up killing Ray, which I would imagine, even though Emmett sees his brother as a loser, that would set him on a path towards maybe collaborating with Peter, the bird and Peter, right? I'm losing my metaphor. The bird and Peter, then to go entrap the wolf.
Also, in the story, doesn't the wolf swallow the duck because it gets so scared? Like, it goes to eat it, but then doesn't it, like...
Yeah, it survives because it's a kid's story, so they don't want to say it ate the duck.
Right, okay.
So the duck is still alive, but just swallowed by the wolf.
Right, and it's in its belly.
It's in its belly.
Okay. So,
the duck gets eaten. Worth noting, though, that in the Peter and the Wolf story, the cat, who's Nikki... Gets away,
and is also...
She swangles, like I said, y'all.
Yeah, coast to coast, swanging.
Also, the cat... in the beginning is trying to go after the bird and the duck, but then when the wolf comes, then she hits the trail. And I also think what might end up happening is Gloria will get Varga if we follow the Peter and Wolf thing, and that will cause Yuri to try and kill Varga in order to save his own skin, but then she has to save Varga, much like in the second season where the police were trying to save, God, I forget their name now, but Kirsten Dunst and
Jesse Plemons.
Yeah, Jesse Plemons from the where they have that standoff in the police station. It could be a lot like that, where she has to then save Varga from
Yuri Nemimo,
who's approaching. So that might be, if this is all foreshadowing, then that's kind of where we're headed. A lot of people on the chat think Sai is gonna face Yuri's bullwhip, though. Now, is it a bullwhip? I've also been told it's a blackjack, or it's a, because it's not a straight whip like we were talking about last time. We referred to it as a whip, but it's kind of like, it's too thick for a whip.
Right.
And I'm curious, I'd really like to know exactly what it is. Oh, Ed and Peggy, by the way. Sorry for forgetting.
Yes, the Blomquist.
Yeah, the Blomquist from last season. So, because right now Sai is kind of in the crosshairs because he's been talking to a cop. He seems like he's a problem. I think Rey is maybe more in the crosshairs than
but
Sai
is. If Varga's whole deal is about being invisible, even though Sai is maybe not a direct threat to Varga,
Sai's still attached.
Sai behaving erratically and smashing up that parking lot brought the police to the office where Varga and his men frequently are. And I can imagine if you're VM Varga, you don't need that business.
No, the second when he left that office, they were telling VM Varga, this is what's up. Sai is causing issues. And VM Varga has no problem taking care of it. Like, I mean, I don't see it going that far that quickly, like, in the next episode. But I'm just saying, eventually, Sai is, I think, going to be a bigger problem. Because Winnie's not going to let it go. Now that she's on with Gloria, are you kidding? And Gloria's invisible, so she has a power over VM.
Yeah.
It's the struggle is going to be real.
And I also feel like everything we've done, even episode 3, which was a bit of a narrative departure, everything we've done so far this season, from the inciting incident forward, feels to me somewhat inevitable in a way that I certainly don't dislike. That's not a criticism, but I feel like we're due for a hard left pretty soon.
Yeah.
I think so, too. Mm-hmm. I also think that while Gloria's invisible, I keep forgetting her name because she's a new character.
Winnie
is maybe not so invisible.
Not.
No.
She's loud, I doubt and she can use electronics and sensors sense her, that it might actually, she might not be long for this world if she ends up just Googling VM Varga.
Yeah.
You know,
possibly. I mean, Winnie in this world can be seen while Gloria cannot.
Right.
So it's like either it makes them a great duo or it's really going to F things up for Gloria.
Yeah.
And I haven't decided yet because I love them together, but, I don't know how they're gonna play with that.
It makes me frightened for
everybody.
Right? Up frightened for everybody.
But then again, Gloria does deal with Donnie Mashman, who has not been in the episode, I don't think this episode at all, but her partner, who doesn't know anything from like his left and right, he just doesn't know anything.
But now Winnie's involved in a way that Donnie's was
not. I agree.
So, all right, we're getting to the point where we should wrap, but wanted to get any final thoughts from you guys before we do about this week's episode.
Well, Drew Novak brings up a good point that Emmett is starting to drink Varga's Kool-Aid, so Sai is starting to look like an obstacle because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another good point for predictions. I'm excited for next week. It looks like a sex tape will be made from the little next week on. That we're doing with Rey once again disguising himself as Emmett. And I think that looks super fun, and I think that's going to play more into also the technology side of this, because sex tapes and the internet. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see where they go with this.
Just more Ewan McGregor doppelganger sex tape.
Yeah.
We need to start a prog rock band, and it's going to be called Ewan McGregor doppelganger sex tape.
Oh, God, I can't wait. We're going to be famous.
Yep, we're gonna do it, and we're going to come back next week, and we're going to announce our world tour about Ewan McGregor doppelganger sex tape starring Mr. Dave Child. Until we come back next week.
I'll be disguised as Ewan McGregor, who's disguised as an anyway, I'll be there.
Yeah, you're the dancer. I feel like you're clearly the front.
Yeah, I'll be in it. If there's a sex tape, I'm in it.
But until we return next week, my wonderful fellow panelist, where can people find you guys on the internet?
You can find me at Mr. Dave Child on the internet and also DaveChild.com. My name is Dave Child.
Hey, guys, find me on YouTube, Tara Erickson, or find me on Twitter, at the Tara Erickson. Yeah.
And I am all over social media at TheLexMichael. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us. Stay tuned for the rest of the season. We're going to be right here breaking down every episode of Fargo. I'm excited. You're probably excited, right? You gotta be. How could you not be excited? We'll see you next week, and we'll be excited together. We love you.
Woo! Mwah.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Ewan McGregor, Doppelganger 16!
World Tour! The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.